This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Welcome back to the program. Glad to have you aboard today. We're here Monday to Friday starting at noon Eastern across the Sportsnet Radio Network, simulcast on Sportsnet 360 and wherever you get your podcasts. Two games tonight, both of them early. The Panthers face off against the Tampa Bay Lightning, 7 o'clock Eastern. Watch that on Sportsnet. Panthers up 2-0 there. Carolina Hurricanes up 2-0. The New York Islanders after a spectacular final. A great closing sequence two nights ago against the New York Islanders. 7:30 Eastern. You can watch that one on Sportsnet 360, where you're watching this program right now. Shane Willis, analyst for the Carolina Hurricanes, joins me now. Shane, how are you today?
I'm great, Jeff. Thanks for having me on.
The pleasure is all mine. First of all, I don't know why I'm so fascinated with that closing sequence from Game 2, but I don't know. Maybe you've been part of teams that have done this. Maybe this has happened to you when you played, but I don't know that I've seen a team, and I'm talking about the Islanders here, that showed so many different versions of their personality in like 60 seconds, maybe 80 seconds. So they went from being a 5-on-6 team to being tied to being a 6-on-5 team. Oh, by the way, there's been two goalie pulls here. Then just to going into complete meltdown at the end of the game. And all of this happened, Shane, as you all know, in 60 seconds. Have you ever seen anything like that?
I've seen comebacks. I don't think I've seen it turn as quick as that game did, Jeff, in that time frame. It was amazing to watch. And I was in the corner watching that game, obviously doing the broadcast with Bally Sports.
Yeah.
And when I came down from the second intermission, everyone, you know, fans and people around me were like, oh, you know, as fans are, they're nervous. They're like, what are we going to do? What's going on? And I said, hey, have you watched the second period? It was a barrage. It just takes one to go in.
Yeah.
And this thing will quickly swing the other way because the offensive zone possession time and shot attempts was an unreal difference in the two teams. But Seth Jarvis scores to make it 3-2, and the building starts rocking. You're like, this could take a turn quickly.
Yeah.
And then they pull the goaltender, and Sebastian Aho ties it up. Now, I actually turned to somebody in the corner, Jeff, and I said, they'll probably win the game right now the way they're going. And Martin goes down and scores. Well, of course, everyone's like, man, I wish I would have grabbed my phone at the time when you said that. But the building was – it's almost the motto of this team at the start of the year. They said, we're going to cause chaos. And that game was absolute chaos to get a win like that. But the mental state of where this team is and how confident they are in those situations. And Jordan Martin talked about it after the game. He said, we have a belief in our locker room that it doesn't matter what the score is. And we knew after two periods that we were in a good spot to be able to still come back and win this game.
The thing about it, though, is like I've never the point that I keep stressing here on this one is the Islanders went from we're comfortably closing this out to a complete meltdown where Patrick Roy is just throwing meat over the boards and starting fights and Gensel's getting slashed by Nelson and Paul Mary's having a good whack at the pinata as well too. Like, and I had a fan DM me video of the sequence after the Aho goal and then after Martinuk scored 9 seconds later. I've heard loud buildings before. We've both been in loud buildings. You as a player, as an analyst, as a fan. I've been in loud buildings as a fan. That game two, like the sequence after Aho scores to Martinuk scores, the place pops like the cork out of a champagne bottle. Compare that to some of the other loud buildings you've been in.
It was amazing, and I've seen a couple of nights like that in PNC Arena. For the 6th year in a row, the Hurricanes are in the playoffs. You go back to their first year when they upset the Washington Capitals.
Yep.
The first game in that building in the playoffs, when the team hit the ice, you couldn't hear yourself talk. They talk about it being the loudest building in the NHL, and it just has that factor, and it's a huge factor in how these guys make comebacks like this and play the way they do. I think you have to go back to, I was part of the Tampa Bay Lightning organization the year they won the cup against the Calgary Flames. So being there in game 7 was extremely loud as well, but there's not much that rivals that building, especially in a situation like that. No one had left, no one had given up hope, and I thought the Islanders would kind of play the way they did at the end of that game much earlier in this series because we saw it last year. These two teams faced off last year, and it was a much chippier style from the Islanders. But coming in, we hadn't seen any of it for two games. And so now I think the most positive for the Hurricanes is we have them reeling. Now they're trying to switch their game plan again. They don't know which end is up. If they can come out and have a huge start in game 3, the Islanders will be in huge trouble.
Okay, you can level with us here. And this is for all of our listeners in Calgary, Shane. Game six, Marty Gelina, that goal was in, right?
I wasn't playing, so I can say video review would have been a huge asset back then for the Calgary Flames. I mean, I played with Marty Gelina on a line when I played for the Hurricanes, so I was cheering for Marty, but I mean, that definitely was a tough call back then.
Very, very diplomatically handled. Very diplomatically handled. So this year's edition of the Carolina Hurricanes, and first of all, there's awful news about Brett Pesce. I'm a big Brett Pesce fan, and we all love right shot defensemen on the points. So what are they? I don't get the sense that there's much, if any, panic around the Carolina Hurricanes, really, about any piece going out, whether it's a goaltender, a defender, a forward. Like, this seems like a team that's just like, okay, noted, injuries are part of hockey, we just move along.
No question. And I think they addressed all those things last summer and throughout the season when you look at the pieces they've been adding. And so ultimately you're not turning to a youngster who's been in your minor leagues. You're turning to Tony DeAngelo, another right-handed shot who brings a ton of offensive flair and, you know, flavor to this series if the Islanders want to go down that path. And it's a huge asset to have when you have your seventh guy as a veteran defenseman to throw in. I think they also have a lot of confidence in the young players that are kind of sitting in the wings waiting to go. And depth has been an asset and a great thing for Rod Brind'Amour all season long, with little bumps and bruises and being able to rest players at the end of the season. Mm-hmm. It's a huge loss. You mentioned Brett Pesce is a tremendous player in what he does defensively, how he plays with Brady Shea. But that's the other positive. Tony DeAngelo and Brady Shea played together in New York.
Yep.
So you're throwing a guy in with a guy who knows each other. They're going to play off of each other. And Tony probably brings a little bit more offense than Brett Pesce does.
Mm-hmm.
And another weapon for Rod Brind'Amour and Tim Gleason on the backside to utilize tonight.
I want to ask you about one more thing specifically about the Carolina Hurricanes here, and that is Seth Jarvis. Like, we've been talking on this program, you know, down the stretch of the regular season. You know, I kind of threw out there, and I kind of took on a life of its own and turned into a number of different conversations. If the NHL had an award like the NBA, which is most improved player, he'd be in that conversation. You know, him and Thomas Harley and Quentin Byfield and Yuri Slafkovsky, like, I'm talking like younger guys that have taken that next step. And it seems like every time I watch Seth Jarvis, who, by the way, along with Jordan Staal on Carolina, should get some consideration for the Selke Trophy. I don't think he's going to be there in the top five, but I think he's going to get some votes. What have you seen out of Seth Jarvis this year? It's funny, Elliot Friedman and I talked to him at the NHL Players Tour, and I said, what did you do in the offseason? He's like, I stopped eating candy. No more Skittles for me. That was my big decision in the offseason. Like, he's a tremendous interview. He's a lot of fun. There's no denying the skill. But this year, Seth Jarvis is on a different level, Shane.
I love that analysis, because I didn't even know the NBA had that, and it would be a perfect award for Seth Jarvis.
Yeah.
And at the end of last season, I really feel there was still the question mark around, you know, Seth Jarvis is a great player. He's a first-round draft pick for a reason. But at the end of last season, you're sitting there going, what is his ceiling? Which way will he go? Mm. And you have to go to what he did all summer long. I mean, he makes the joke of saying he cut out Skittles and candy. Yeah. He put in a ton of work off the ice. And I think that's part of the culture of the Carolina Hurricanes. When you have a buy-in factor from a young player, mm-hmm. Rod Brind'Amour starts to utilize him on the penalty kill. He plays responsibly defensively. And this season, the other part of his game was he wasn't playing with Sebastian Aho all year long. He was playing with Jordan Staal and Jordan Martinuk and creating chances and scoring. He wasn't only scoring goals, but huge goals and game-winning goals for this team. And now it's just kind of continued in the playoffs, and he looks like a 10-year veteran out there in my mind.
Yeah.
And someone said, you know, he was our guy that was in the fan voting to get in the All-Star game after the teams had been picked, right?
Right.
At this level, Sebastian Aho is playing all-star level NHL hockey right now. And it's great to see, because, again, he has a passion for the game. He's bought into what this team does on a nightly basis. But the skill and the goals he's scoring now at this level, go back to the second goal of the game against Varlamov in game two. I mean, an absolute snipe over his shoulder to get that building really going and that team in the right direction. So it's been a great season for Seth Jarvis, and no one is ever complacent, and that's what you look at Seth. He's always having fun. He's joking around. But when it comes to work, the mindset that he has, the line he's on, doesn't bother him one bit, and it's consistency. And I think that's the other thing you and I both know. from a young player's mindset.
Yeah.
To become that guy in the NHL, you have to be consistent. And he's shown it for 82 games and more now into the playoffs for the Carolina Hurricanes.
Let me ask you about Patrick Roy. And let me frame it this way. You know when you go to see a band and they don't play a couple of the hits that you really like? You kind of leave and you're like, yeah, the band was good, but I wanted to hear these couple of hits. And they didn't play them. So I'm watching Patrick Roy, and game two is really emotional. And I'm used to the Patrick Roy that is, you know, banging the glass and snapping sticks. I'm not used to this calm, reserved, dare I say, mature Patrick Roy. Like, I want to see, and I thought we might get it, you know, in that closing sequence the other night. I want to see the Patrick Roy that goes banana sandwich. At any point in that game, do you think, okay, here comes the snap moment for Patrick Roy?
Yes. I was also surprised, and in my mind, is that the maturity that Patrick Roy has grown into and around the league, or from a Hurricanes mindset and some of the Hurricanes fans, does he know he's outmatched? Does he know this team in the first two games has really laid on the line? The Islanders have played very good in the first two games, and you're 0-2. Like, mentally, from a coaching standpoint, players, they're looking at it as like, do we have a shot? I mean, we've given everything we had. The last game in game two, Carolina Hurricanes, over 100 shot attempts. The New York Islanders, 28. They had one shot in the third period. So at the end of the game, it was almost like, well, we saw that coming. It started in the second period, and we held on as long as we could. You cannot play, and the NFL has even gotten away with it, you cannot play prevent defense, especially in the National Hockey League. And the Hurricanes came at him in waves, and they couldn't stop it, and it was eventual breaking point. So the first period to me tonight is the key of this game. Mm-hmm. Which team gets the waves going early? Can the Islanders score to get their crowd behind them? I think, as you and I both know, in lovely New York, if the Canes score first tonight, the fans will all of a sudden turn on the New York Islanders in a different way. So that'll be an asset for the Hurricanes as well tonight. But if you see the same second and third period tonight from the Hurricanes in the first period, the Islanders could be in for a long night.
We look forward to it. This one's going to be a lot of fun. Shane, thanks as always for stopping by. Enjoy the game tonight. Game three, Carolina with a 2-0 series lead. Game three tonight at the UBS. It is the Carolina Hurricanes and the New York Islanders. Shane, thanks as always for stopping by. Enjoy it tonight.
I appreciate it, Jeff. Thanks, buddy.
There he is, Shane Willis, Carolina Hurricanes studio analyst. You can watch that one 7:30 Eastern tonight on Sportsnet. Let's bring in Matt Marchese. Matty, it's interesting with Shane Willis mentioning, look, if things don't go their way early, we've seen Islanders fans turn on their team. And you and I have had this laugh before about the Islanders fans. Like, Islanders fans, to me, are some of the most interesting in the entire NHL in that they both love and hate their team all at the same time. Now, I know that there's that element that every fan has about his or her team to begin with. But then, much like there was the old saying about Winston Churchill, he's like everybody else, only more so. I feel that way about Islanders fans. They love and hate their team like everybody else, only more so. Do you feel that way? We always talk about Michael Leboff.
Yeah, I was going to say.
You're going to go with Leboff, who's I love the texts that I get from all the time. But they're like every other fan base, only more so. Agree, disagree?
No, agree. They go to the next level. Like, there is like the love-hate, but then there's the love-hate-hate that the Islanders fans have.
Yeah.
They take it to another level because they can be absolutely belligerent with their own team. Maybe that's from, you know, too many years in Nassau Coliseum. Maybe that's part of it.
Too many years of bad teams or false
bad
starts.
Bad teams and all that. They did have the good fisherman jersey, though. That's a lot of people don't like that one.
I still don't like it.
I love it.
I can't even like it ironically.
If I can find an Islanders fisherman with Ziggy Palfy or Wendell Clark, I will purchase it. My wife will not love it, but I would buy that.
It's going to go up right there.
Yeah,
right
for
there
sure.
Where the Maple Leaf jersey is over your right shoulder, my left.
Maybe we can get that in the budget. Maybe we can get that in the budget.
All right,
then I'll just take it home.
You take back your empties. You look for every quarter under every cushion. We'll get ourselves a fish sticks jersey to throw up there.
So a quick one on the Islanders and the Hurricanes in that game.
Yeah.
Johnny Lazarus put this out there. Hurricanes 3-10 on the road in their last 13 playoff games since 2021-2022.
I'm new to hockey. Is that bad?
That would be not very good.
Oh, okay. Well, see what happens tonight, game three. Time now for Line Change, presented by Sports Interaction, your homegrown sports book. Bet local. What's on tonight? Two games. What are you picking?
Panthers at Lightning. This is a very interesting one. Puck line is Lightning -1.5. So the under has hit in 7 of the last 8 playoff games between these two teams. Mm-hmm. The losing team has scored 2 goals or less in 10 of 12 all-time playoff matchups. Now, I know that seems obvious, but the losing team has never scored 3. So if you score 3, you're either winning.
Yeah.
You're probably winning, basically. Nikita Kucherov, only 2 goals in his last 8 playoff games against the Panthers.
Oh, he's a bust. Oh, he's a dud. Throw him back. No good.
I'm just saying, like, it may not be something, but it's not nothing.
Here's the thing about this game. So no Sam Bennett for the Florida Panthers. That is a major drag.
We have an update on
for them.
Sam Bennett.
Do you have another Sam Bennett update?
I don't have another.
Yesterday I called for Sam Bennett updates about 5 or 6 times here on the program.
Yeah.
We don't have any more. Oh, Sam Bennett.
No, we don't have Sam Bennett.
I do like Sam.
He's not playing. We
One
know
of
that.
My favorite players is why I'm always curious. So no Sam Bennett for the Florida Panthers. Here's what I'm wondering about. And again, the Florida Panthers go up 3-0 in this series. If they win tonight on the road, that is not a guarantee. Tampa's tough to play at home, and I never bet against Andre Vasilevsky. If the Panthers go up 3-0, that is a tough one for the Tampa Bay Lightning or anyone to come back from. And again, the question I ask about this series, and it's always the more difficult when it's a state rival that does it to you. Does that mark the official beginning of the end of the Tampa Bay Lightning? That would be 2 first-round exits in a row. I don't think John Cooper or anyone on that team is prepared to go down easy. I think they will throw everything at the Florida Panthers tonight, starting with the opening faceoff. If you're Florida, you got to withstand the first 10 minutes. This one should be an interesting one. 7 o'clock tonight on Sportsnet. That was Line Change, presented by Sports Interaction, your homegrown sportsbook. Bet local. Going for a tour around the NHL here in a couple of moments. Jason Gregor's still to come on the Oilers. Merrick Show continues across the Sportsnet Radio Network, simulcast on Sportsnet 360, and wherever you get your podcasts. Quick breath, back in a moment.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL, the J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
All right, welcome back to the program. Welcome to Hour 2. Jason Gregor will stop by from the aptly named Jason Gregor Show on Sportsnet, or at Sports 1440 in Edmonton. Every time I say sports now, I say Sportsnet. I've been here since 2012.
You've been brainwashed.
Eyes propped open, Clockwork Orange style. Every time you hear sports, you must say Sportsnet. That might be on my contract. Welcome back to the program. So Gregor's coming up at the bottom of the hour. We'll talk about the Edmonton Oilers. Do you have a thought on that game last night, Matty Marchese? That was a strange one because I never thought that we'd be sitting here saying the Los Angeles Kings just beat the Edmonton Oilers in a game and it wasn't 2-1 or 1-0. Like, really, I thought the only way the Kings were going to win a game is A, Cam Talbot stands on his head and it's 1-0 or 2-1.
Well, not only that, the Oilers scored 4 goals and Connor McDavid only had 1 assist.
Yeah, that's
I thought they did a really I think that's the biggest key. Even though they did allow 4 goals, I thought they did a marvelous job on Connor McDavid last night. Mm-hmm. And they pointed out on the broadcast, if it wasn't Arvidsson going and sticking him a little bit, then he just trades off and it's Trevor Moore, and then Quentin Byfield runs him a bit, and Mikey Anderson did a great job on him last night.
Byfield was awesome last night.
He was great.
Let's park some time here for a second and appreciate Quentin Byfield. Quentin Byfield was tremendous last night, and I will not hear anybody talk about how that play to Kopitar at the end, the overtime sequence, was not deliberate.
It was so fast. I had to watch it over.
He totally knows what he's doing because there was a lot about, oh, no, he doesn't know what he's doing. Oh, no, that's an accident. No, he didn't mean that one. Did we get the news?
We got some news. Hockey Night in Canada.
All right.
Tweeting this out. You should take this one.
Okay. Heard about this one this morning, and now it's been confirmed. Where was this one?
Hockey Night in Canada.
Okay. Bob Cole has passed away. Longtime Hockey Night in Canada announcer, proud Newfoundlander, someone we were all proud to call colleagues, and many of us were proud to call a friend. He was the voice of my generation of hockey. A lot of the key moments that I remember as someone, you know, as a kid in southwestern Ontario, as someone growing up through hockey and now someone that gets to work in hockey, he was always the voice. Big games, big key moments. One that I want to play for you here coming up in a little bit is his radio call in 1972 at the Summit Series in Canada versus USSR. I want to play that for a couple of moments, but the news just breaking now, and it's been official and now confirmed that Bob Cole has passed away at the age of 90. And one of the things that I think we all noticed about Bob as a play-by-play caller, as a performer, whether we understood it at the time, when you get told this, you really start to notice it. And that is, there's never been a play-by-play voice in the history of hockey who's worked at more levels than Bob Cole. And here's what I mean by that. In the industry, we talk about working at different pitches, working at different levels. And Bob Cole had a timber in his voice when there was nothing really going on. It's just the game settling in, and there's a very pedestrian call that Bob had. It was always very comfortable to listen to. But then there were other levels. There was a level where something hysterical is about to happen. Something big was about to happen. Something was growing. There was a brewing storm happening on the ice. And nobody in the history of the game hit that pitch better and more consistent than Bob Cole. The example that I've always given people about the greatness of Bob Cole was that you could be on a Saturday night and have Hockey Night in Canada on in the living room. You could be making dinner, making snacks, feeding the family, getting everyone ready for Hockey Night in Canada, whatever. If the game was on, and you've probably had this experience too, and I think we've all had this experience, when the game was on in the background, you could tell how important a moment was just by Bob Cole's voice. I know I did this a number of times. You probably did as well. You'd be in another room, you could still hear the call, and you would know when you had to run to the room because Bob Cole's voice told you so. And the way that he handled what was happening at that moment indicated it was time to get your butt in front of the TV because something big is going to happen. He was part of Stanley Cup Finals. He was part of great international games, whether it's the Olympics, and we think of 1998 in Nagano, and we think of certainly as Canadians 2002 in Salt Lake City and some of those tremendous calls. I grew up through the 70s, and they're going home. 1976 in the Philadelphia Flyers Red Army game, another classic call that will live on forever in hockey infamy. To say nothing of just like the sort of janitorial work of doing it every single game and every single night throughout the regular season. You know, he worked with a lot of different people. When I worked talking in Canada ringside when I started back in 2008, I had the privilege and honor of being part of a couple of great booths. Bob Cole with Harry Neal. Bob Cole with Greg Millen as well. He worked with some other legends. We think of Mickey Redmond and we think of John Davidson. But for a lot of people, the Bob Cole, Harry Neal booth, in a lot of ways, was the Cadillac. Do we have Harry on now? We're calling. Okay, we're going to give Harry Neal a call here and get Harry aboard. If you're just joining us now, the sad news, and this is going to be felt from coast to coast to coast, in our country, Bob Cole has passed away at the age of 90. It was told to me not too long ago that it was very peaceful, and that's good. Bob Cole was someone who became the voice, not only the voice of hockey in this country, but someone that provided a real familiarity. You know, there's always been the debate, you know, is watching hockey passion or is it habits? And I've always said that about Bob Cole. With Bob Cole, it was both. It was both passion and it was habit. And even, you know, even towards the end of his career, there was that series, Chicago and Los Angeles, which I still put up against a lot of the other great work that Bob Cole did for a number of years. You know, the minutia of the broadcast may not have been there by the end for Bob Cole, but no one called a more exciting game than Bob Cole. It really didn't matter any of the specifics. You knew to get to the television when Bob Cole hit that pitch, it was time to get to the TV. His longtime partner, Harry Neal, joins me now. Harry, I wish it was under better circumstances, but thank you so much for joining me. And I know how your relationship with Bob stretched back years, and I offer my condolences. Your initial thoughts upon hearing that Bob Cole has passed away?
Well, I hadn't talked to Bob for I don't know how long, and so I had no idea whether he was doing well physically or not, but it's a tragedy that he's gone. He was one of the very best at his job, mm-hmm. and I was lucky enough to work a number of years with him, I don't know whether he would fit in with the new routine that goes on where the color commentator can get talked while the play's on, because if you ever did that with Bob,
yes.
he gave you that straight arm. I can remember saying, Bob, did you play football? And he says, no, I never did. I said, where'd you get that straight arm you give me every time I go even two words into the play starting?
Yeah.
So, but he was brilliant at his job, and anyone who had the pleasure of listening to him and following the game at the same time, you quickly realized how sharp he was in that department. And he was really a good guy, and I enjoyed working with him and enjoyed the time away from the rink when we were traveling or doing games on the road.
Such a wonderful man, tremendous broadcaster, the voice of not just one generation, but many generations of hockey fans. I'm curious, you know, you mentioned the straight arm he would give you if you tried to talk while the action was going on, because that was, and that's a very specific way to call a game, but that was Bob's time. What would like a, you're on the road, maybe it's the playoffs, maybe it's a regular season, like what would a day-to-day be like between yourself and Bob Cole when you were working together?
Well, he was a pleasant guy. I mean, I know in the broadcast he sounded as good of humor as he actually had. He thought that was a big assignment to do, and nothing was going to get in the way of him not doing it the way he wants to do it. And for that, I appreciate it, because it certainly made my job a little easier. Mm-hmm. And we spent a lot of time talking about the game coming up, or if we're on the road, about the game we just did. And he loved the sport.
Yeah.
And that showed through his broadcast every night.
You know, one of the things that, well, there's a couple of things. You know, on the road, Bob always sat in the passenger seat. That was his rule. You know, Elliot Friedman, you know, tells the story about how one time the crew pranked him and said, you know, Bob likes to sit in the back. You sit in the passenger seat, Elliot. Elliot was young, and he made the mistake of sitting in the front seat and was, you know, felt the wrath of Bob. A young man, I stood in that seat. And, you know, we also know about, you know, Bob, and I had a chance to work with you and with Bob a couple of different times in Hockey Night in between 2008 and, I guess, 2011. And I was always interested in, you know, the morning skate and how Bob would very discreetly go to each coach, and all he wanted was the lines. All he wanted was the line combinations. That's what he was most interested in. Do you have a thought or a recollection of Bob at morning skate? It almost seemed as if the skate itself, sure, you have a glance at it, but he really wanted the lines. That's what he was going to dig into.
Yeah, well, that there's no doubt about that. And if he gave you the lines in the morning and they weren't the lines at night, and that often happens, coaches change the lines if things aren't going good. And it used to bother Bob a little bit, because he did a lot of homework once he got the information on, especially on teams that we didn't see too often.
Yeah.
It was easy for the Leafs. We did more Leaf games than the other team games. And, you know, he was such a professional at his job that if he didn't get the cooperation he thought he needed to do the broadcast the way he wanted, he got upset and he had a bit of a temper.
Speaking with Harry Neal, longtime analyst with Hockey Night in Canada, longtime color voice alongside Bob Cole, the news of the day, Bob Cole has passed away at the age of 90. You know, they're going home is a big one. Various Stanley Cup calls that we can all recall, various international hockey events, whether it's Nagano, whether it's, you know, Salt Lake City. Are there calls that either you were sitting right beside Bob for, or other ones that come to mind when you think of some of the great calls in the history of Bob Cole?
I don't know that any one was a lot better than any other. His enthusiasm for great plays was obvious, mm-hmm. and his downcast when players made stupid mistakes and it ended up in goals. Mm-hmm. Not that he was cheering for one team or another, but he didn't like to see bad plays. And when he saw good ones, you knew what he was talking about. And when he saw bad ones, he wasn't quite Bob Cole.
Yeah. Do you have a final thought on Bob Cole? Again, people are just joining us. Bob Cole has passed away at the age of 90. Harry, we'll leave you on this one. Lasting memories for you about Bob Cole.
Well, I was always impressed before I worked with him, listening to them, because he was did it before I did. And for me to get a chance to work with a guy that I really admired as a hockey fan,
yeah,
was really something. And so as sad as it is that Bob passed away, but I don't think there's a broadcaster in hockey that got more likable than Bob Cole did doing games. Yeah. And he never seemed to cheer for either team. Yeah. He just wanted to cheer for a good game.
Yeah, he did. Harry, it's great to hear your voice again. Be well. We hope next time it's we chat, it's under much better circumstances. Thanks so much for this, and take care of yourself.
All right, bye-bye.
There he is, Harry Neal, a longtime analyst for Hockey Night in Canada, working booth for a number of years, and maybe that was the combination that you grew up with. I mean, Bob Cole worked with a number of people in the booth and helped launch a lot of careers and helped a lot of young broadcasters along the way. Was always had time for a chat, for a quick word, for a lesson, whether it's a history lesson or in hockey, or whether it's a lesson in broadcasting, and had his rules. Thank you very much. He very much had his Bob Cole rules. Someone who knows that is Cassie Campbell-Pascal, who joins me now. Cassie, again, I wish we were under better circumstances. If people are just joining us now, Bob Cole has passed away at the age of 90. Thank you so much for joining me here today. Your first reaction upon hearing this news?
Hi. Yeah. Sorry. It's just shocking, but not shocking. You know, knowing his age and things, just sad. You know, it's funny. You reach out to people that you've worked with when you worked with Bob. You know, I've talked to Shirley Najak, who's in Spain, and Kathy Broderick, and you start to just reach out to those people that are a part of that generation of when you broadcasted with him. So you're sad, you're laughing because you're sharing memories and stuff. So, sad.
You know, I'll tell you, Cassie, you're one of the most obvious people to call on a day like this. You have a remarkable story that Bob Cole was part of. It involves a snowstorm. It involves Hockey Night in Canada. It involves a Saturday night. It involves you getting ushered up to the booth when you thought you were going to do ringside. And then you get to sit next to the legend in your first time in the booth. Can you share that story with our listeners and viewers here?
Well, it's interesting. You had Harry Neal on there too, and you know, I replaced him last minute, and that's sort of how I got started in being an analyst up in the booth. And you know, just how great Bob was. Like I was sort of worried at the time. You know, this is 20 plus years ago that. You know, a man of that generation, is he going to accept me? And of course he accepted me right away. And, you know, that's where I learned about broadcasting and the cadence of it. And,
yes,
you know, to allow people at home to feel like they're in the building after a goal is scored, to let them hear the crowd. And then with Harry the next weekend, you know, he sent me a text and said, let's go down to the rink together, you know, because it was a tough week and, you know, not everything was positive. And, you know, he sort of, you know, stuck by my side. And it was a great tandem that we all listened to for such a long time. And then to all of a sudden be put in that position, it was quite a night and one that I'll never forget for sure.
Ron McLean joins us here in a couple of moments in conversation with Cassie Campbell-Pascal. The news of the day, Bob Cole has passed away at the age of 90. Now, one of the things that Harry just mentioned to me, Cassie, was, you know, he every now and then when he talked while the action was going on, he would get the straight arm, the Heisman, the, you know, it's not time for you to talk. It's the play-by-play caller's time. Did you get the straight arm from Bob Cole during that game?
You know, I say that I did not. I think, you know, that was the gentleman coming out of him. But I, over the years, you know, he would hit his hand on the bench between us, like basically like stop talking. And, you know, you knew, I always knew that when it went into the offensive zone, don't talk. If it's around the faceoff dots, don't talk. Let him set things up. And I, you know, I think he was the true last play-by-play person who wasn't trying to be an analyst, you know? And he just was calling the game. Who was on the ice, his cadence, the way he told the story, the way he set up a big face-off. It was, you know, I really believe it was the last of the original play-by-play gentlemen who just called the game and didn't try to be an analyst. And, you know, that's what I learned from him is try to bring the fans who are watching at home into the arena so that they feel like they're part of it. And some of the Bobisms over the years, you know, the dark rum and Coke. And, you know, I rode him home on his at a hotel one time in Columbus. He had a bad foot and he wouldn't get in a rickshaw and we couldn't get a taxi for him. So I had to ride on the rickshaw with him. And I was doing a series, Chicago, Detroit, and we had to bus back and forth. And he had the captain's chair in the front. And, you know, just so many great memories. You know, Frank Sinatra was his favorite. And,
yes.
Listening to Frank Sinatra with him. He had his little disc man with his CDs, and he would be on one AirPod and I'd be on the other. And, you know, he'd be singing at the front of the bus or waiting in the airport. And so just so many fun stories for sure.
You know, that's so interesting when you talk about like the nature of how he called the games too. Like hockey, I've always felt, I mean, baseball, you have the luxury of having a lot of time. I'm in between pitches. You can take your time. You have like a longer pace to your game. Hockey moves quick, but it never ever felt like Bob was fighting against the game when he was calling it, because I always got the sense that Bob was a real minimalist in a lot of ways. He wasn't caught up in the minutiae and didn't try to force anything on the game. Essentially, Cassie, what I'm getting in here in a very long-winded way is he was such a listenable broadcaster. It almost like didn't matter what he was saying, and he wouldn't let that tiny things get in the way of a really easy call. Like there are a lot of times where it's like Toronto rushes the puck out, puck turns over, Chicago the other way, as opposed to trying to force in a player's name every single time. Now for big moments, the player's name was primary, but like there will be forever, you know, classes taught on the brilliance of Bob Cole and how you call a hockey game. As I leave you here, Cassie, do you have a favorite Bob Cole call or a Bob Cole-ism? I know you've said to me before, oh, baby, and I know it's a Bob Cole. I've heard that from you so many times. Is there a favorite Bob Cole-ism for you, Cassie?
Well, I think for me, just, you know, our first game together, I actually fortunately called an NHL goal before it happened. It was Darcy Tucker who scored a 2-on-1 power play goal. And I remember his face. He just looked at me off air like, holy cow, you just did that. And I looked back at him like, yeah, I just did, and I can't believe it. And, you know, just I think how him and I just had this bond. You know, even when I wasn't working with him, producers, you know, in the later part of his career would say, hey, can you just call Bob today? Just say hi. Just, you know, put a smile on his face. And, you know, that's kind of the relationship that we had. Like, even when we weren't working together, we talked a lot, especially on Saturdays. And, you know, his isms were just his isms, but they were legendary. And had his way to call a game, but he never made the game about him. And that's the thing that I think made him so special as a broadcaster is obviously he had his rules and he had it the ways that he was set, the way he wanted a game called. Mm-hmm. But the game was way bigger than his call. And that was something that you always understood from him, that the game and the players and the coaches are way bigger than any of us broadcasters, regardless if we're on Hockey Night in Canada or not. And, you know, that's something that kind of stuck with me, too.
Those are excellent points. Cassie, thanks so much for sharing some memories. And listen, you have a very historic memory with the late Bob Cole. Thanks for stopping by today. Much appreciated.
Yeah, hugs to everybody. Hugs to everybody.
Yes, indeed. It's one of those. Now we know what it feels like when 30 million hearts break all at the same time, all across this country. Please be joined now by the host, longtime host for Hockey Night in Canada, Ron McLean. Ron, tough day for everyone from coast to coast on the passing of Bob Cole. Your initial thoughts upon hearing the news?
Well, love to obviously Christian and Hillary and Megan and Robbie and the grandkids. Is a special family, Jeff. Just an incredible family. The kids are all super talents in their own right. I went to see Megan perform. Jitters was the name of the play at Brock University, and she was probably the closest to following in her father's footsteps that way. But yeah, just a great Karen, his partner in life for so many years, the mother of those children. That's the first thought. Is I'm really blessed to have been down to Topsail, Newfoundland, to his home, to go to the Bob Cole Classic Golf Tournament. Mm-hmm. Several, you know, it's funny hearing Cassie too, and she's right. They were a dynamic duo.
Yes.
My falling apart with Bob was Kemper Lakes Golf Course in Chicago in the 90s. And I'm kidding when I say this, but we were playing Jim Gregory and Dick Irvin against myself and Bob Cole in a match. And we were at the 16th tee on a par four, and we were down two. And I popped my drive, I don't know, 180, 200 yards. So now we're in a situation. It's a par four, and it's I got to go over water to the pin. And Bob says, you're not going for it. You're good with your mid irons. You take a six or a seven, and you lay it up to the left away from the water. And I said, no, Bob, I'm really good with my 5 wood, too. I can get there. And needless to say, I threw it in the drink. And he chased me around. And the funniest part, Jeff, Michael Jordan was on an every other tee box with us. He was playing golf, and he had an NBA playoff game that night. And he went out and hit 47 points. I was always amazed at that. But Bob, oh, God, you know, mentor, just as Robbie, his son, said to me this morning, the world is going to have to shift in order to make room for the storytelling, because it's just an incredible legacy, an incredible story. That Bob.
Well, listen, this is, you know, there's rare times in the country when everybody's heart breaks at the same time, but this is it right now. And I can't think of, listen, he had, you know, fans and admirers and, you know, people that he worked with, colleagues, fans, everything from coast to coast to coast. But on a day like this, I really think about Newfoundlanders. I really do. Well, and we know how much of a proud Newfoundlander Bob was, Ron.
There's two parts to that. One, he grew up at the base of Signal Hill, where Marconi, you know, the first electronic bridge, you know, so he grew up, he could actually walk to the spot where the signal arrived. And that kind of made an impression. But the other was, and I'm sure you know the story, when he was a boy playing soccer, he broke his leg badly, and he's sort of in his bed, in his bedroom for a six-month recovery, listening to Foster Hewitt. And it always struck him that Foster would say, "Hello, Canada, and hockey fans in the United States and Newfoundland." Yeah. And Bob couldn't believe that Foster was speaking somehow specifically to him, a Newfoundlander, because they weren't even part of Canada at the time. And that gave him the notion of what a bridge, you know, an electronic bridge can do. And he made it a point to transport us every chance he got, right from wherever we were, in my case, Red Deer, Alberta, to center ice at Maple Leaf Gardens in Toronto or wherever the game was that night.
You know, it's fascinating, and you bring up Foster Hewitt and the legendary story of, you know, Bob traveling to go to meet Foster and giving him, you know, tapes. "Hey, Mr. Hewitt, I've been working on my play-by-play calling." And, you know, I go back to 1972, and listen, Foster Hewitt comes out of retirement for the tournament, calls a wonderful tournament, and on CBC Radio also, Bob Cole is calling. And a little bit later on, I'm going to play that call, which I will put up against the Foster Hewitt, and the Foster Hewitt is legendary with Henderson. But I'll put the Bob Cole call on radio at CBC up against the Foster Hewitt call any day of the week. Do you have any, when you hear the name Bob Cole, iconic calls that you can think of? Maybe it's, you know, the Flyers and Red Army. I don't know. Maybe it's Salt Lake, various Stanley Cup finals. Anything come to mind for you, Ron?
Those are two of the best. I always say Jeffy had one in every decade. So Béliveau in 93, you know how Florida's won 11 in a row in overtime. Yeah. Back in 93, the Habs won 10 straight to win the Stanley Cup in overtime. And Jean Béliveau is at the rink in Montreal, and he says to Bob, "I don't think I ever had an overtime goal." And Bob says, "Well, Jean, I hate to break it to you, but you did. You scored in double overtime in the Boston Garden."
Yeah.
And Béliveau said, "How do you remember that?" He said, "Well, it was my first ever broadcast." So imagine that, April 24, 1969. Yeah. But for sure, Joe Sakic, surely that has to be it. You know, "Stand up and cheer, Canada." That's Salt Lake. And then the "Oh, baby, Mario Lemieux is big." There's a new bunch on the block, the Edmonton Oilers by name. Oilers' first cup in 84 is big. They're going home, as you mentioned, 76. The Red Army Philadelphia game is big. Even Jeff, for me, little things, like we would be into the playoffs for the first week, and springtime in Montreal is always special, and everybody's on Bishop and Crescent Street, and there's just a vibe to Montreal you can't top. And when Bob would say, you know, "These are the Stanley Cup playoffs," and this is Montreal. You know, it was four levels of inflection. He spent the bulk of his time in the most soft-spoken, sensible manner, and then he'd go to, and Foster taught him this, but he'd go to level two when there was an important draw as he set the scene for that, and then he'd go to level three for the big hit, and then he would go to level four for the save or the goal that changed the game. And nobody, and Cassie's right, he loved actors. He based everything on the performance, never thought of himself as the lead man, thought of himself as the director of this play, and he studied that to the nth degree in order to create a great drama.
Let me finish with this one, Ron. I'm sure there'll be plenty on Hockey Night in Canada about Bob Cole, who, if you're just joining us, has passed away at the age of 90. For me, it was December 29th, 2008. That was the first time you threw to me ringside. It was a Washington-Ottawa game. It was a big one for my family. Big one for me, professionally.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
And I'm always curious, what was it like with Bob Cole throwing back to studio with you?
Well, first of all, I remember cutting highlights. I used to do highlights for channels 2 and 7 in Calgary. I was a sports anchor. And you could tell when there was a pause in the Hockey Night in Canada broadcast that Bob was going to say, and now it's time for a Hockey Night in Canada update. Here's Dave Hodge. And I would, you know, I knew the cadence like you said.
Yeah.
33 million of us kind of grew to know what hockey sounds like. And it was through Bob and what he did. And as far as I just drove in the other day, I spoke to him on Saturday, which is, I'm very grateful. Shirelli Ajak and I were talking about stuff. Shirelli's a great producer for CBC and Hockey Night in Canada. And we were discussing Paris. Anyway, he said, you know, have you talked to Bob this week? And I said, no. And he didn't say you should call him or anything like that. But you know how Shirelli is. And I understood kind of implicitly, better get on the phone, and had a lovely conversation. Robert, you know, as his children will tell you, just razor sharp right to the end. But, you know, anyway, it was grateful for me to talk to him Saturday and then drive into work and think about how many times in the playoffs it would be me driving and Bob in the passenger seat, my co-pilot, telling me to move over onto the shoulder to get around traffic, or he would break laws to get to the rink to be on time. Anyway, just, you know, he was a mentor. It wasn't so much the pinch me factor as the gratitude I would feel every time I was around the man, because he was selfless and he was brilliant. And yeah, we're all mourning the loss, but we just reflect on a radiant life and an incredible talent.
He taught us all. A wonderful man, a great caller. Ron, thanks so much for this. Look forward to whatever you have planned on Hockey Night in Canada about the late Bob Cole. Thanks for hopping on here in a pinch.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. Lots of love.
There he is. Ron McLean, longtime host of Hockey Night in Canada. Now we will get to, I'll be honest with you, we've completely changed the show today. With all due respect, this is all going to be about Bob at this point. We've had a conversation with Harry Neal about the passing of Bob Cole, Cassie Campbell, who's been part of historic times with Bob Cole, and you just heard from Ron McLean, the longtime host of Hockey Night in Canada. Someone else who I'm sure feels the sting of this, who worked with Bob Cole for a long time, is John Davidson, not here to talk about anything about Columbus, but only Bob Cole. JD, thanks so much for joining me today.
Oh, how are you, Jeff? That's tough news today for everybody, but then you hear, I'm honored to follow Ron McLean, and you hear the stories, and it brings back memories, and you know, you get so sad, but then you say, you know what, you got to think about the good times, and there was a lot of good times. Oh.
There were some tremendous times, and you were part of some tremendous times alongside Bob Cole. And, you know, JD, first of all, thanks so much for joining me. And anyone who ever worked with Bob or knew Bob, we offer condolences and our thoughts at this time, certainly with his family, and then to everyone he touched. And, like, Bob's one of those people that I worked with him briefly, maybe 3 or 4 years, JD. And, I mean, you worked with him for a long time as well. When you hear the name Bob Cole, John Davidson, what goes through your mind?
The voice, you know, John Shannon called me last week and said, have you talked to Bob lately? And I said, no. He says, yeah, you should call him. Mm-hmm. So I called him and he didn't pick up, but I left a message. I said, Bob, I hope you're doing well. Just checking in. And how about those Yankees? He was a huge Yankee fan.
Yes.
I said, they came out of the chute 10-3, man. Well, this is exciting and we got to talk about it. So anyway, I left him the message, but in hearing this today, the first game I ever did for Hockey Night in Canada, Maple Leaf Gardens, I was a wreck. Mm. And I didn't sleep all night. I stayed at a hotel right near Maple Leaf Gardens and got to the game, and it was game time and the anthems. And Bob took a lineup card, put it on the wall beside him, used a thumbtack, and there was his notes. That was the lineup.
Yep.
And I'm sitting there. I was a nervous wreck. And then I see him stand up, and he undoes his belt and his zipper a little bit, and he sits down. I'm saying to myself, that's different. But what he did with his voice, it came from way down there, yes. And he didn't want anything to get in the way. You know, he just didn't.
Yeah.
So he put his headset on, his right hand holding the piece over his ear, and the left part up over his head. So the game starts, and again, I'm petrified. And we go through the first commercial, I haven't said a word. Then it was the second commercial, about 5 minutes later, I still haven't said a word. So after the second commercial, we keep going, and I tapped him on the shoulder because I want to say something, and he jumps up because I startled him. And the headset kind of fumbles, and this is how you know Canada, we'll be right back. You know, it's a commercial. And he looks at me and says, don't you ever touch me again. And I'm going, blah, 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 just like Jackie Gleason, right? And so the game's over. We worked together. It was a blast. We had fun. And then the next week, we did it again. And then the third Saturday, we finish a game. We go to the hotel in Montreal. We go to the bar. He'd like to have his Captain Morgan, and I'd have a beer.
Yeah.
And he says, you know something, Big John? I says, what's that, Bob? Because I was the rookie, and he's the vet, right?
Yeah.
He says, I've been talking to my wife, and she really thinks she'd do a good job with me.
Mm.
And ever since he said that, we were married right there. As soon as his wife gave the approval, and that was it. I was no longer the rookie. I was one of the guys working with him, and we had fun. We did playoffs. We did Stanley Cup finals. We had some late nights in Western Canada in particular, Edmonton, Calgary. Sure. It was just spectacular. And this brings in it wakes the memory up a little bit of all the good times for sure.
Like John, we I remember you as a goaltender through the 70s, and know you as an analyst as well, and know you as an executive in the NHL. Now, I'm curious about players and Bob. One of the things that I've heard before from various players, whenever they had. A big moment, a big goal, a big hit, a big fight, a big something. I can't tell you, and you've probably heard the same, how many players have said to me, I'm glad that it was Bob Cole calling that. And up until those players have said that to me, I've never really digested, but it makes a lot of sense. Like if you're going to have a big moment, who's delivering that? And I've had so many people say, I'm glad that it was Bob that called that moment. Yeah. You had similar?
In Canada, hockey ain't Canada. I mean, the Saturday night back in the day, the music. I was there when we wore the light blue blazers. I was even there when we had the orange ones.
Mm.
And there's something about Bob. You know, I've over the years, I'm pretty close to Wayne Gretzky. You'd always call him Mr. Cole.
Yeah.
I saw when he went into the Broadcasting Hall of Fame for hockey, and I saw the love and the feelings that people had right across the country of Canada. And I'm Canadian. I've lived in the States most of my life because this is just where I work. It's just what it is. And but 2 years of that, I went up to Canada. I moved back to Calgary, and worked with John Shannon. Ralph Mellenby's the one that hired me, and Don Wallace, and went to work, and then I had the time of my life working with people like Bob Cole. I mean, he was, I just, it's, when you live in the States and you hear Vin Scully with the Dodgers those years, you have voices in certain cities. They're longer than the players are, longer than the coaches are. They're the ones that people just marry. They get so close. And Bob was just one of those guys, only he was at the top.
Mm-hmm.
And he was tough. You know, he was a good boxer when he was younger. He could, and he went through life with that, you know, this not a chip on the shoulder, but very confident and don't mess with me type of thing, which I loved. I loved. And it's just Bob was a person who was intense. He was brilliant at what he did, and he was a strong-willed person. And when you got inside his circle, you're loyal for life.
Yeah.
And besides that, being a Yankee fan is okay, too.
let me close on this, JD. I'm talking to John Davidson today. If you've missed the news and just joining us, Bob Cole has passed away at the age of 90. One of the things that, as a broadcaster, and I did Booth very briefly, that we all marvel at is the different levels that Bob Cole would work at. And I've told the story about how, look, you could be in the kitchen on Saturday night, hockey night in Canada, the game's starting, maybe you missed a couple of minutes. Just hearing the timbre of Bob Cole's voice lets you know whether you need to race back to the living room to get in front of the television. Yeah. When you're in the booth working with him, like we all talk about, oh, like, you know, you're a rookie and you're on the bench and you're marveling at the star of the team that maybe you grew up watching. Was there a part of you that when you're working with Bob, you can't help but just be a fan at that point?
No question about it. No question about it. I mean, I grew up in Calgary, and Hockey Night in Canada became just such a huge part of everybody's lives. Mm-hmm. And then I had a chance to work it. Then I had a chance to work with Bob Cole. And when that voice started and the puck came up and it was a 3-on-1 over the blue line, getting to center ice, moving in, it got more exciting and more exciting. And it went up and up. And remember, he did it with his belt undone and his zipper down just a little bit so he could get that voice out.
Yeah.
He had to get it out, and he did. It was brilliant. I mean, just once in a lifetime, you find people like that. It's just the voice, the energy, and he was always on. It was when it's game night, you knew he was ready to play the game. You know, he just and you work with a team. Television is it's a team sport. You have producers and directors and cameramen, and there's so many people that make it work. But if you have that voice, if you have the voice, and he's good, wow, it just caps it off.
The
voice, was great. I'm really gonna miss him, and I'm glad these memories are flowing back to me. And when you hear people like Ron McLean, who you just had on, I mean, we all say thanks, and we care about his family.
That's a great thing. We all say thanks to Bob Cole. JD, thanks so much for stopping by today. Much appreciated.
Okay. All right, Jeff. Take care of yourself. Thank you.
John Davidson, who worked with Bob Cole for a number of years. We thank JD for stopping by. If you're just joining us, the news of the day is Bob Cole has passed away at the age of 90. Want to bring on, and Dick Irvin's going to stop by here in a couple of moments as well. Very much looking forward to Dick's memories of Bob Cole. In the meantime, Mark Askin, who's produced more games than anybody else in the history of the game, joins me now. And that includes a number of games with Bob Cole. Marco, thanks so much for stopping by. I wish it was under different circumstances. You were very close with Bob. You worked with Bob. You traveled with Bob. Your thoughts on Bob on this day that he passes?
Well, hi, Jeffy, and thanks for having me on. So as you were saying that brief sentence before you intro'd me, I smiled. Because Coley was all about the game. It was the game. It was the game. It was the players, and it was the game. It was traveling with him. Mm. I mean, simply put, he's the GOAT.
Yeah.
Like listen. There's been a lot of great guys. I don't want to mention any other people. I clearly can say that this man was the GOAT. He was the greatest. He had the greatest timing of any play-by-play guy in any sport I ever listened to.
Yeah.
He never oversold a moment, but he had that sixth, seventh, eighth sense that when Wendell Clark was coming down the wing, or he was winding up at his own end, or if Joe Sakic, or if it was, didn't matter who it was.
Yeah,
Jeffy,
that's a great call, yeah.
He just knew it was going to be a big, big, big moment. Mm-hmm. And he never missed it. He never missed a moment.
Yeah.
And like we talk about great and legendary people, he was every bit of that. Mm-hmm. And it was an honor that, like, I was with him for 12 years the first time and every game with him. And yes, JD said it right. I mean, the pants were undone because that was his comfort.
Yeah.
And he didn't have a headset that went on both sides of your ears.
Yep.
He always did a game as if he was doing radio. But everybody built a headset for him. Mm-hmm. The technicians took care of him because everyone loved him. He was a treasure. He's a national treasure.
Yes.
And the pride that Newfoundland felt when he was at his absolute zenith, they feel today.
They do. Let's look. You're right, Marco. Like, this is all across the country. I've said it before. Like, this is what it feels like when 30 million hearts break at the exact same time. That's what this country is going through right now.
Yeah.
Tell us. Share some experiences. I mean, the road stories are great. I'm curious about interactions, not just with hockey players or coaches or executives. Tell us about Bob Cole with fans, because let's not forget here. This man was an icon. This man was a legend. This man was someone that everybody wanted to have a photograph with, have an autograph, have a dark rum and coke with. What was Bob like around fans?
Well, he was humble. Like, Coley never felt comfortable being told he was great. And I mean this sincerely. I mean, he knew it, but he would go, come on now. You know, come on, Mark boy, you don't have to tell me that. Like, how many times I heard that after a game when I had, and I looked, just look at the 80s and 90s with Bob and Harry, Ron and Graves. And there's me, a little boy from East York, Ontario, producing them and being like in awe that these people knew who I was, let alone being the producer. Sure. And, but for Bob, every time he met somebody, it was like, this young guy came up to me and he said this. I mean, Mark, what's going on there? Like, I mean, like, everybody loved him.
Yeah.
And yes, I will say this, Jeffy. I don't know. I mean, I didn't hear Ronnie. I heard a bit of JD, but I wanted to say this. His preparation for a game was one thing. He had a card.
Yep.
And it had the lines and defense pairs on one side of one team and on the other side. Now, the most important thing about that was the coaches would tell him at the morning skate what the lines and defense pairs were when there was no meetings with coaches like they have now. There was no... Like, that did never happen. Coley got it.
Yeah.
Coley got it from every coach except one. And he never would say that coach's name when he was on the ice. I swear, he got so ticked off at one coach. I won't say. It's not for me to say. Yeah. But that coach never was really spoken nicely of because he didn't follow what Coley wanted. But Coley had the lines, and he held them to his chest like he was holding the secrets from the Pope. And he wouldn't tell you what the lines were. He wouldn't even tell me.
Yeah.
And yet you knew it was his preparation. So when he met a fan, he couldn't figure out how that fan could know all this. But he didn't realize that he realized it maybe, but he didn't want to use it to pat himself on the back that people adored him. Like, you and I grew up. I mean, if it wasn't Danny Galavan, it was Bob Cole.
Oh yeah,
and it was just like, oh my God, like it was just every night something he did was like, oh, did you hear that?
Yeah,
like, oh my, how many people in any walk of life, forget about television, in any walk of life have that kind of influence on a fandom?
Mark, I'm speaking with Mark Askin, a longtime producer, the man that's produced more games than any other producer in the history of the game, and longtime worked with Bob Cole, who's passed away at the age of 90. Let me close on this one. Have you ever heard someone say that Bob didn't call the game as much as he sang it? Like, I look at, but listen and think about Bob Cole and think about all the different levels that he worked at, and we've talked a lot about that, but Bob didn't let tiny things get in the way of the call. Didn't let his sound clash with the action. It was all about trying to capture the emotion of a moment as opposed to fitting in a ton of information. Let the studio do that. Let the analysts do that. Bob was there to reflect the emotion of the game, agree, disagree.
To 1,000,000%, right? And Harry got the Heisman quite often.
Yeah, oh, he mentioned Harry that. Oh, he mentioned it.
Oh.
He was on
absolutely.
Earlier.
Absolutely. And the Heisman became like, I know what's going on. I'm driving this ship. Here's the other thing, though, Jeffy. You're so right. We all trusted him.
Yeah.
Nobody said, what's he doing? I never heard that, ever. Mm. Ever, because we all knew that when Bob laid out, Harry had been given the Heisman, but we weren't there. We're in the truck. But we knew when it got silent, nobody said to me, you might want to tell him to talk. No.
Yeah.
Because when he did it, he sang it. So when those words were coming out of his mouth, he didn't use a ton of words to say stop. You know, he was in a play-by-play sense, more excitable, but a little bit like Vin Scully.
Mm.
We never really heard them make, you know, you never really heard them stumble because it's like they had it. You know, Frank Selke Jr. once told me when I first started, Mark, you can't do live twice. But Bob, it appeared, had been there before.
Yeah.
In those moments, because he knew exactly what to say and how to inflect. I mean, he's a once in a lifetime, once in a 10 generation play by play guy. And I want to say also what JD said. I know you got to go and you got other people, but I wish the best for his family.
Yes.
Because that family was vital to Coley. His kids were vital to him, and we love them.
Loved what he did. Couldn't wait to get back home. Mark, this has been great. Thanks so much for sharing some memories of Bob Cole. Much appreciated. You be well.
Thanks, buddy. Take care. You too. Bye-bye.
There he is, the great Mark Askin, a longtime producer, called so many games. Mark Askin is one of those people that, even though you may not know it, you've watched tons of Mark Askin's games. Do we have Dick standing by? We do. Let's get to from, listen, we're talking about a legend now with a legend. Mr. Dick Irvin joins me now on the news today that Bob Cole has passed away at the age of 90. Dick, thanks so much for doing this today. I know you worked alongside Coley some great calls, and I want to get to 1976 specifically, but on a day like this, your initial thoughts on Bob Cole?
Well, you know, listening to all of the people that you've had on here, I've been watching the show. Boy, have you brought back some memories for me, I'll tell you, with and the stories that they had. But, you know, Cassie Campbell hit one note that if you were to ask me or Bob, you know, whenever, the last few years, or what was the best time that you guys had together? I'm not talking about a broadcast booth. I'm not going to talk about a hockey game. It was the night he and I went together in Pittsburgh to see Frank Sinatra. It was the 1992 Stanley Cup Finals.
Oh, that's great.
So the game is one night, and then the game is two nights later, games one and two of that series between Pittsburgh and Chicago. And in the middle night was a Sinatra concert. And through a friend of mine who worked for the Penguins, I got a couple of tickets. He was at the Civic Arena. I mean, it was the same place as the hockey games were. And that night, well, Bob wrote a book with Stephen Brunt, and he mentioned that particular in the book about the highlight, one of the highlights of his life. And we had, I mean, the two of us were just like two little kids, you know, it was crazy. But there we were with Sinatra. So and we played golf. I remember we played a lot of golf. Mm-hmm. JD was great at lining up golf games during the playoffs.
Sure.
He worked with us a lot. And one time we played a game in Chicago during a playoff series we were doing there, and Michael Jordan was on the golf course at the same time. And we happened to run into him sort of near a green, near a tee or whatever. And both Bob and I talked with him, you know. We'd never, that was even before the Raptors even existed. So, we had, and you know the famous going home call?
Yes.
Well, that was a Sunday afternoon game in Philadelphia, and in the broadcast booth that day, folks, was Bob Cole and me, and Denny Potvin.
Yep.
Now, he wasn't a superstar, but the Islanders hadn't won all their Stanley Cups yet. Mm-hmm. But whoever had the idea of bringing in Denny, he was terrific. And Bob and I used to talk about that. We'd say, whoever brought, you know, Denny and did us a big favor, because he was a great help to us on that broadcast. I remember that.
Listen, Dick, you've been part of, I'm biased, but the two best booths of all time. I mean, you with Danny Gallivan. You with Bob Cole, and I do want to, because it is such a big part, just selfishly, it's one of my first hockey memories, growing up watching that game and hearing that call and hearing you color it in. Take us back to that game. I just had Joe Watson on the program last week, and we spent a lot of time talking about it. But take us back to 1976, Red Army against the, and this is a big part of the story, defending Stanley Cup champion Philadelphia Flyers. There's that great game in Montreal, the tie game, one of the best games ever played. And then there was the Stanley Cup, in some ways, internationally, was on the line. High stakes. There was no way the NHL was going to let the Red Army team beat their Stanley Cup champions. And the calls from both of you, all three of you really, were brilliant. Take us back.
Well, you see, I think one of the big boosts that game got was the game in Montreal.
Yeah.
It had really set the stage for that tour of the Soviet teams. And so the Philadelphia thing was just a perfect follow-up to that. Mm-hmm. When you, as you just mentioned, it was the Stanley Cup champions. And so I just remember that both of those games, the Montreal game and the Philadelphia, the Montreal game I did with Danny, and John Ferguson was the third man in the booth for that one. He had been the assistant coach in 72, right?
Yeah.
And that was a good idea to bring him in there. And in the Philadelphia game, it was just, again, the tension. Even in Philadelphia, you wouldn't think that they would have that, maybe that same feeling about the Soviets as we did in Canada. But, boy, they did that afternoon. Mm-hmm. That was really something. And Bob was obviously equal to the task.
When you first heard they're going home,
yeah.
What do you recall,
Dick? Well, I recall saying to myself, okay, I was No, they're not, because they haven't been paid yet. They're going to come back, and they did. Because apparently Alan Eagleson went into the dressing room, or Clarence Campbell, one or the other, and said to them, you go home, you're not getting paid. So they came back on the ice.
This has been great. I have about 60 seconds left for this one. But when you look back and you know Bob Cole is no longer with us, like what's going to come to mind for you right away when you hear Bob's name?
Well, I think hockey moments that he and I shared. I calculated just the other day, Jeff, I worked 21 Stanley Cup Final Championship games. And the majority of them at the beginning, Danny Gallagher, because the Canadians used to be there.
Sure.
But then I guess at the end I worked with, you know, Bill Hewitt and Don Whitman and Jim Robson. But with Bob, we had a lot. And if you're asking people about Bob's call, the goal that he called from Mario scoring in Minnesota.
Oh, yeah.
They still play that goal over. That, to me, is in all of the games that Bob and I did together, that was the play. That was it for us, if you're going to zero it in on one play. But we did a lot of them. And, you know, don't forget this now, folks. The last broadcast team to broadcast a Canadian team winning the Stanley Cup, 1993, was Bob Cole, Harry Neal, and me. And that was the Canadians and the Kings.
Beautiful. Wonderful memories, Dick. Thanks, as always, for stopping by. Always a delight catching up. Wish you were under better circumstances.
Okay, thanks, Jeff. Enjoy your show.
There he is, the great Dick Irvin. And when you talk about the great color man of all time, there's Dick, number one, without a peer, much like Bob Cole, without a peer. I'm not sure that we're going to have any time to play clips right now. The show is wrapping up here in a couple of moments. Again, if you've just joined us, the news of the day is not good for this country. The news of the day is not good for hockey. Bob Cole has passed away at the age of 90. You have all of your memories. I have my memories of that man right there if you're watching on Sportsnet 360. The great Bob Cole. Take a moment as this show goes off the air. Just silence. Just you and memories. Great calls from the best. Condolences to the friends and family of Bob Cole.